Welcome into the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. No Ryan Wallace, no Darren Millard. Instead, you're stuck with Chris Chapman for the next 2 hours. Although I'm not rolling solo, I'm here with my good friend. Always a good time to be joined by Lindsey Brown. And getting you set for the Golden Knights and the Chicago Blackhawks tonight. Lindsey, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm reacclimating myself to the rink climate here because I took a little hiatus in Australia. So I say good day to everyone, all the hockey fans in Melbourne. But I'm really excited to see the future of the league in a lot of different ways on the ice tonight and some definitely adventuring goalies.
Yeah, the present, which is Vegas Golden Knights, obviously taking on potentially the future of the NHL in Connor Bedard. Of course, young superstar, still a kid, and it amazes me how well this kid has played for being 18 years old. I mean, we're talking about a man's game, and he's come in as a teenager, and he's put up numbers most people would only dream. They would be a dream season for a lot of people, and he's just beginning to scratch the surface. Should let you know that this is being broadcast live inside the Findlay Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studio, home of the woo. I won't get too loud because I don't want to blow out the speakers here. So
I could hold the headset away from your face, or I could just do it maybe in like a seat over there. I guarantee you, you'd hear me.
Well, the thing is, because we are in an empty T-Mobile Arena, it might echo quite a bit.
And hello,
we have Stacy joining us. I don't want to blow her ears out either.
Let's keep Stacy's job easy today. That's a good idea.
You just mentioned that you're back from Australia, Lindsey, and it's a place that I've always wanted to go. I've never been. I've been all over the world. Australia just has never been a place I've been able to get to for various reasons. So you were over there for about 10 days, maybe a little longer. Just how much – I know it was your first trip there, so how much did you enjoy it?
I loved it. I've never been international to that level, so the flight over there was a little bit rough, and I prepared for it. I packed a lot of snacks. I think I had about 30 packets of Scooby-Doo snacks and at least one family size of Gushers.
Yes.
And so I was stuffing my face along with Triscuits and Goldfish that I had to throw away before I entered the country because they're very strict with what they let in. Them being a island separate nation, a very big island at that. I suppose all continents are islands if you really think about it. But it's an amazing place that's wholly unique, and that's not just when you talk about the animals, the foliage. I mean, the architecture alone was amazing. No two buildings really look the same. Everything looked like it was out of a futuristic version of an architectural digest. And like no billboards or advertisements, no people walking around in sports paraphernalia. It's just a completely different culture. And I was able to stay with one of my friends, Gabby, there and hang out with her family. And I truly enjoyed it. I wish I was still there, although this is a good consolation prize.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's so interesting because the flight, listen, as a guy who's traveled, I lived overseas in Asia, so I know how long travel across Pacific Ocean is. And it does suck, but you brought up a really interesting point. This is a life hack for those who have never traveled overseas. Bring lots of candy with you, because once you get rolling, and I'm not talking like 2-3 hours into the flight, I'm talking when you look at your watch and you've been in the air for like 8 or 9 hours
and you know you still have like hours.
Yeah, you still have 4 or 5 hours left, and
your
butt starts to go numb because you've been sitting for so long. You're going to want to get up, walk around. What I like about the Asian airlines is they'll generally give you like you can get a cup of noodles, or they a lot of times will have like rice crackers or little things like that, but not nearly enough to entertain. Like, I mean, I flew to New York in January, and I watched an entire season of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
As
there,
one does.
There and back. So, fortunately, you know, I was able to occupy myself for most of that flight, but always travel with like a gummy candy, whether it's gummy bears or
don't get it at the airport. They're gonna gouge
you
real
bad. And it never fails because I will always go to like Walmart or Target, and I'll buy a couple bags of like the Haribo or whatever, and I'll dump it in a plastic bag, clear plastic bag, and it never fails. I go through security at the airport, and it's always here in Vegas for
some
reason.
Well, you know, there's reasons.
Yes, and they always stop me, and they wanna take my bag of gummy candy out.
Sniff it.
They'll sniff it. Mm-hmm. They'll have the dog sniff it. They'll run it through the scanner on its own. And it's like, come on, guys. I'll eat it right in front of you.
Right.
So it's made me think that I would never want to sneak anything into the bag that shouldn't be in there, because some places, they're not as forgiving as we are.
No, certainly not. And that's not a chance that I would take either. I'm always nervous, even if I don't have anything or intend. I'm just like, there's something in here that I've left, and they're going to find it. And
yeah.
I had like a disaster scenario on my flight back when I went through LAX, which is the worst airport of all time.
Yes, yes.
I've never been to LA. I was there for about a half hour. Will not be back. Will not be back, because I got off in the international terminal, and then it was my understanding, my mistake for not clarifying, that I thought you had to get on a shuttle to get to a different terminal. That shuttle took me away from the airport. All of a sudden, I'm under this highway overpass next to a park and ride, and my flight's in an hour and a half, and I'm like, I got to call my mom. Like, I was freaking out. And eventually, I asked people around, is this going to go back to the airport? Is this what's going to happen? Eventually, I get back. I go through security. The characters that were there. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. When you have a Harley Davidson neck tat, you know it's time to party.
Was he going to Australia with
you? No, no. I don't know where he was going, but I know that it was going to be magical. But I started to put all my stuff away, because in Australia you don't have to take off your shoes, you don't have to take the computer
it's like that
off.
In Asia too,
let people walk to the gate, just whoever, as long as you're flying domestic, they can see you off from the gate like we're in the 90s. It was crazy.
Wow.
Anyway, I get back to America, and they basically make you strip down, and it was so busy. I'm trying to put it all the bins, and then I start to go online. They're like, you need to take that sweatshirt off. I'm like, okay, I do it. I have to like squeeze in again. And then they're like, you need to take off that one as well. And so I had like five different pieces moving on. And again, a half hour prior, I was under a highway overpass. And so I was a little bit discombobulated. And we made it on the flight. We made it all the way back home. But I even invested in one of those fancy airplane pillows where you could lean forward. It's almost like
a
pyramid without the pointy top.
Yeah, how did it
work?
It
was genius, except it's about 2 inches too short, so it was putting really bad pressure on a not-so-great part of my back, so I couldn't even use it.
Oh, that's never good.
Thanks a lot, Bezos.
That's never good.
I never shop at his place, and that was the one thing I did, and it didn't even, like, work out for me.
So I got to fly to Japan during COVID, which was wild, because I went through LAX. By the way, if you're ever going to fly overseas, try to find a smaller airport, San Diego, San Jose, Sacramento, even Vegas, because I've flown from here to Korea nonstop. Always try to go avoid L.A. and San Francisco. But I flew out of L.A. during COVID. And
I can only imagine.
The Bradley terminal was bizarre. It was unlike anything I've ever seen, because I was walking through security, and there were literally like only three people in front of me. And I was walking to my gate, and there was nobody at my gate for like, I got there 2 hours before my flight left, and about 45 minutes to an hour before like six or seven other people showed up. There were only nine people on my flight.
The dream scenario. Yeah, I wish.
They offered me a seat in premium economy, but I declined it because the armrest doesn't pull up.
There are compromises to the premium seating.
I
have a story about that.
I had
Australia.
A four-seat row to myself, and the one behind me was empty, and the one in front of me was empty. I was pretty happy. I was able to – I'm not that tall, so I was able to stretch out and not have to worry about – but it was wild. And then I flew from San Jose to Japan once, which was San Jose, right? Boo, Sharks. But it was great because coming back in through customs – there were only like maybe 150 people who were on that flight with me. So it was, you know, you land in LA, there's thousands of people going through customs.
What month was this?
This was in the summertime.
So of 2020?
No, no.
Or 2021?
No,
I was
going to
say, I don't think there was flights going over there in 2020.
I think
summer,
this was 2017 from,
I thought you said we're at a
from San Jose.
But Got it.
During COVID, I flew from LA. But anyway,
still
enough of our travel stories. We do have a hockey game to talk about tonight.
We should.
Lindsay. Chicago Blackhawks roll into town. Connor Bedard, we did kind of mention him briefly. But for the Golden Knights, they are now in a situation where they kind of sort of control their destiny. Now, they still don't know who they're going to play. That picture could become very clear tonight, or it could still be a little up in the air heading into Thursday night's game. Basically, because of the fact that Nashville lost in regulation to Pittsburgh, and the L.A. Kings got their doors blown off by the Minnesota Wild, the same Minnesota Wild team that gave up seven to the Golden Knights, went into Staples, not Staples, what is it, Crypto.com or whatever, and beat up the Kings last night. So by virtue of that, Vegas is currently in the second wild card spot. Now, they cannot be the first wild card based on tiebreakers. They don't own the tiebreaker over LA or Nashville, but they have the potential to end with 100 points, whereas Nashville and Los Angeles only have the potential to end with 99. So if Vegas is able to win out, they will finish with 100 points, and they will be the third
divisional place team. Seed, right?
Yes, mm-hmm. Third place team in the Pacific, which means they would play the second place seed, which at this point looks like it's going to be the Edmonton Oilers by virtue of their loss to the Vancouver Canucks. However, if they were to lose one of these next two games, they will remain in the eighth spot or the second wild card, and they will play the Dallas Stars in the first round of the playoffs. Now, I don't think either matchup is one that I would be crazy about, but I do think it's one that the Golden Knights would have a real opportunity to, we'll say, upset the higher-seeded team,
mm-hmm.
despite the fact that they beat both of those teams in the playoffs last year on their run to the Stanley Cup.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious what your... If you're Vegas at this point, you still don't know if it would be Edmonton or Vancouver, but you do have a very clear picture it could be Dallas. I think there's a very specific path I would prefer to take if I was on the Golden Knights or as a fan, but I'm just curious as to what your thoughts are. Which direction do you think is the best path for the Golden Knights to go to get back to the Stanley Cup final?
See, the scenario that you texted me about last night only included Edmonton and Dallas, and so I'm not sure about the direct path to Vancouver, which I think is everybody's preference if you had to choose, because they're young,
right.
They're not tested, they're smaller, so you can push them around. And ultimately, it's not like I'm not taking them seriously, but it's just they haven't been here for a while. And,
right.
But if you're asking me to choose between Edmonton and Dallas, I want Dallas. I want Dallas because they command a certain type of stylistic play that I think would set up more to the favor of the Golden Knights than it would versus Edmonton, and also would set the standard as they would move through the playoffs if – assumedly, they would be able to advance past the Dallas Stars. They're very familiar with one another. There's a lot of a bad blood, you could say, that even goes back to our favorite not-so-city San Jose, right? With
yes.
Pete DeBoer and Pavelski and all that. But I want this Golden Knights team to play the game that brought them to the promised land last year, which is that tough physicality, forechecking the hell out of your opponents, and you're kind of looking to hold serve and being patient. Whereas an Edmonton matchup, I feel, would be a lot more opportunistic, a lot more rush heavy, which the Golden Knights certainly have gravitated more towards throughout this entire season, but that hasn't necessarily equated to the same level of success, let alone consistency, that this team is used to. And so I want the tough test that commands that disciplinary hockey that Bruce Cassidy has become so well known for in implementing his teams. And I don't really care about the seeding. This is why they need to go back to the 1-8, because all these other scenarios, it's too much calculus. It's
yeah.
too much math. We're hockey players. Come on.
That's kind of, you know, we talked about it yesterday on the show. One of our callers, Mike, asked if we can make a tweak to the playoffs, and my preferred playoff setting would be just seed 1-8,
mm-hmm.
like the NBA does. I know the NBA is goofy with their play-in tournament now, but like this idea of, and Darren explained why they did it. It's because
of incentivized rivalries.
Well, there was that, and there's the when they had unbalanced divisions.
Mm-hmm.
Some teams were getting more. Some teams divisions were getting more teams in because of the unbalanced schedule and all that. But I think, you know, you kind of touched on it a little bit. I think, and look, to go through the scenarios, Vancouver right now sits on 107 points. Edmonton with 104. Edmonton would need to win out, and Vancouver would need to lose their two remaining games outright in order for them to not win the Pacific Division. So I think it's very likely that the Canucks are going to, if they get 1 point in their next two games, they will be the Pacific Division champions. They can still catch the Dallas Stars.
That's wild.
Dallas has one game remaining. However, if they were to get a point in that one game, they end up clinching the conference and they would be the number one overall seed. All roads would go through Dallas, hypothetically, in the Western Conference playoffs. But, you know, there's this really funny, silly stat. You talked about the rivalry going back to San Jose. I talked about it a little bit on the show yesterday with Ryan. It's almost like the Golden Knights don't have a specific rival in terms of a team. However, I think Pete DeBoer has kind of, despite the fact that he coached the team, there was a rivalry with the fans, even when he was a coach of the team. There were a lot of fans.
Yeah, he wasn't really ever fully accepted, I don't think.
Right. And Ryan, as Ryan mentioned, it's funny because three games, and Tomas Hertl is already a Golden Knight.
He's one of us.
He's one of us, yeah. So Pete was never, and I think a lot of it had to do with the way that the series with San Jose ended, that second season, the way Gerard Gallant's tenure ended, and the way Pete DeBoer was brought in. I think that never sat well with the fans. And so I think
it was during COVID hockey, which
well,
doesn't have
the.
Well,
it was before. It was right before.
Right, right before.
There
and then the next
no...
season and a half, there's not a lot of, like, we can touch the players, basically. There's so much involvement. It was
separated. The whole time he was here, the fans were kind of separated from the team.
Exactly.
There was no. First of all, we were separated from the team. So
that was
we
the most
really.
Bizarre thing.
Yeah, we never really got the access with Pete that we had with Gerard or we have now with Bruce.
And Pete really wouldn't tell us anything anyway.
Yeah, Pete was great at.
Coach speak.
But what I liked about Pete was his very dry sense of humor. He enjoyed laughing. He enjoyed having fun. Enjoyed having a few beers.
He liked you.
He did like me, yeah. And I liked Pete. We got along quite well. Talked about cookies and Christmas music and all sorts of good stuff like that. But nonetheless, I think for me, it's tough as far as which path I would prefer. I think I'm leaning towards Edmonton for the fact that the road to the Stanley Cup final would go through the Pacific Division.
Mm-hmm.
You beat Edmonton, hypothetically, you then get the winner of Vancouver and probably Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're playing Dallas, you're getting the winner of Winnipeg and Colorado. Then you're getting to the Western Conference Final. You're going to have to go through some wear and tear because Dallas is a big team, a physical team.
Mm-hmm. But that's inevitable in the Western Conference.
Yeah,
like
it's just the way it's set up. Yeah.
And that's the other thing, too, is like I don't want to get too far ahead of things because nothing is ever taken for granted. You got to earn every inch of the ice. I can throw out all the coaching cliches. But I would rather have Edmonton play around, and then get beat up a little bit than face them rather than getting them fresh out the gate.
Yeah.
I don't really care about home ice advantage because it doesn't really matter some years. And I kind of see this Golden Knights playoff potential as, like, why not pretend you're the Kansas City Chiefs and just say, we'll go on the road. We'll beat every single team that's supposed to beat us. We'll go beat Buffalo there. They'll go beat Baltimore there. And everybody would had every reason to pick against them each week because they didn't show what their true colors were, even though that was carried over from the previous championship season and the foundational elements had been built there. But you have to prove it every game, every day. And so I think this team would benefit from the tough road in a lot of ways.
You know, I think it's one of those things that's going to build character.
Yeah.
And this team has shown in the past that they have a lot of character. Look, we don't know the status of Mark Stone, whether or not he'll play, whether or not he's not going to play, when, if he does play, he would become available. But I don't think that matters because I feel like this team, they have enough leaders in the locker room. You have Alex Pietrangelo, who we know is not playing tonight, and he hasn't played for quite a while due to an illness, undisclosed illness. However, I will mention, I did see Alex leaving the rink on Sunday.
This rink or practice?
This rink.
Okay.
After the game, I was walking to our media room from the Golden Knights locker room, and I saw Alex walking out of the arena with his family. So good sign that he was in the building.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some rumors or speculation yesterday. I believe it was Elliot Friedman. Who had mentioned that they were not anticipating they weren't anticipating Pietrangelo to miss significant time. And I'm thinking to myself, he's already kind of missed significant time. But I think what he meant was going forward. So hopefully Petro gets back soon. You know, he's certainly missed. And I can say that a lot of the people I've spoken to away from the organization, they're very concerned. You know, they have I've been asked by a lot of people, both within the media and people that I talk to who aren't media, whether they're listeners or friends, and they've asked me what I know, and they've asked me if it was his kids or if it was a family issue or what. And, you know, I know as much as they do. And, you know, I just hope, and I think we all do, that whatever it is, you know, the family is well and he's well. But I think when you get him back, that's a boost. It's a real boost because he's a leader and he is the alpha on the blue line and two-time Stanley Cup champ, first member in the history of the St. Louis Blues to touch Lord Stanley. So getting him back is one of those things that helps the team. But you're also missing William Carrier, who hasn't played in a while.
Another big catalyst.
Yeah, I mean, he's the catalyst to that fourth line, which has done well in his absence. Tonight, a couple of guys out. Jonas Rombierg will be in, and I like Jonas a lot. Like, I'm a big fan of his. I think, first of all, I think he's one of the nicest human beings you'll ever meet. And the funny thing is, like, he's kind of been around the organization. Well, he has been around the organization since day one. He was one of their first ever amateur draft picks, and he's been a part of the team ever since. I think him and Paul Cotter are the same draft, and Nick Hague. So a couple of those guys from that first year, Yuri Patera, he was in that first draft as well. So a couple of those guys.
Who says the Golden Knights don't hold on to their draft
picks? Well, they hold on to the good ones. Yeah, they hold on to the ones that turn out to be NHL players.
Suzuki. Just kidding.
No, well, yeah, that's
he turned out okay, too.
Yeah, multiple-time All-Star, captain of the Montreal Canadiens, who will...
I don't want to talk about them yet. I'm saving it.
Unfortunately, we'll talk about it a little later. But I just think, like, considering how things have gone for this team the last few months or the last few weeks, the ups and downs, the fact that this team is in a position to pretty much control where they play now with two games remaining, I think it's a testament to, as we just talked about, the character of the organization.
Yeah, and the commitment to the system, although the execution hasn't always been there. And when you think about just the lineup gymnastics that have been present throughout this organization, not just this year. This year they certainly feel it the most, besides the season that they missed the playoffs entirely. But you have to realize, too, that there's different combinations. It's always changing. You're not really sure. And those voices in the locker room, as big as they are, there is enough flotation to keep this ship afloat. And I think that's what, whether Petro or Mark Stone aren't ready right away, it's okay. That's why Kelly McCrimmon goes out and makes the Thomas Hurdle trade. That's why they go out and get Noah Hanifin and have those guys here for the long term. I know that Noah signed that extension while I was away. Could not be a bigger fan of that move, because I love watching him play. He's a fascinating player and brings so much to this team that you can withstand some of these bumps and bruises. And I know we're going to talk a little bit more about the impact of Noah Hanifin and Thomas Hurdle and how that truly translates on the ice, because I think one of the biggest benefactors of, or the two people that benefit the most from those acquisitions are Mark Stone and Alex Pietrangelo, because it takes so much more off their plate. They don't have to do everything. I don't want Mark Stone taking cross checks in front of the net anymore, personally.
Yeah.
I want to avoid that at all costs. So they put Tomas Hertl in there, and you're like, oh, look at this. Look what could happen. An overtime winner the other day.
Yeah, we'll talk about Hertl in the next segment, because I think, you know, as I mentioned, it's only taken three games and he's already one of us.
Yeah.
What was it? Toy Story with the little alien dolls and the claw machine. Yeah, one of
you
us.
You saved our lives. We are totally grateful.
You sounded like one of the Coneheads.
How dare you? I gotta get back in front of the mirror. Get these impersonations down.
Have you seen Coneheads? Or is that a little before your time?
Kind of before the time. That's initial. That's like first season SNL, isn't it?
No. I'm talking about the movie with Dan Aykroyd and Chris Farley.
Oh, it was just all the SNL characters. I always think at the early days they always get fused together.
Yeah, it was
it's the 90s.
It was kind of a flop. It wasn't as big as Wayne's World. You know, it was the same era, but
yeah,
it didn't exactly turn out to be as good as Wayne's World. It was, you know, it was one of those movies that you kind of forget was made.
Yeah.
But Yeah.
I worship at the altar of Mary Catherine Gallagher, personally.
Yeah, who was that?
Sometimes
Superstar?
Sometimes you put your hands in your armpits and you smell them like this.
Molly Shannon.
Love Molly Shannon. Brilliant. I'm 50 years old.
Oh, that was a good impression.
Yeah. Well, one for two.
And I know.
Stacey, two for two, one for two. Two.
She says she's two.
An advocate. She's an advocate.
Okay.
She's an ally.
All right.
Sorry.
But, you know, I think it's funny that we go off on these tangents, but. Like I said, we'll talk about Tomas Hertl next segment. I want to talk about Noah Hanifin as well. We know Anthony Mantha is not going to play tonight. So Paul Cotter going to be in the lineup tonight for the Golden Knights. Some switcheroo being done. Michael Mattio, who had missed the previous two games as a healthy scratch, he's also back in the lineup tonight. He'll be playing alongside William Karlsson.
Watch
and
Brett him Howden. Score tonight.
I like Michael.
He always does that. He'll go in and out, and then he'll find a way to make a big play.
You know, restricted, or he's an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year. But I think he's a guy who, you know, you'll like to have guys like him on your team.
Mm-hmm.
He's improved defensively. I think he's a timely goal scorer, and I think he's one of those guys who just quietly every night goes out and does his job. And you know, it's a numbers game at this point for this team, and you know. We don't know the health status of a lot of guys. Mantha and Stevenson both day-to-day. We don't know what the situation is with William Carrier or Mark Stone, but and then Alex Petrangelo as well. But certainly this team is – I think the conversation I like to have and I like to mention is if you are in a situation where you are pulling NHL players out of your lineup to replace them with better NHL players mm-hmm. as opposed to – what we saw earlier in the year where you have to pull some guys up from Henderson, and not to say that Byron Fraze or Mason Morelli didn't play well in their time here, but those guys are still AHL players.
It's a different caliber.
It's a very different game for the Golden Knights, whereas now you're looking at taking Michael Amadio, Pavel Dorofeev, Paul Cotter potentially out of the lineup and replacing them with William Carrier, Mark Stone, Chandler Stevenson, etc. That's a good problem to have if you're Bruce Cassidy.
Yeah, this is a team that is stacked to a degree I don't really think I've seen before, to be honest. Like, even if you think back, Blackhawks are in town. When they were winning their championships every other year, basically, they would have that team, and then they would tear half of it down, and then they'd rebuild it with other supplementary players, and then they'd have to tear it back down because that was just the situation, the circumstance of the salary cap and how they were signing their players, because they obviously had a very distinct core. And that's, who would you consider a distinct core? There's more than usual. I would say there's like probably nine people, and it's usually you talk about four or five. And so they truly are all in on this upcoming playoff season, and I hope that they're able to click, because it's not automatic that everybody comes back together and you haven't played together that it's going to be boom. Seamlessly integrated. But we saw Mark Stone and Jack Eichel get going early on in the playoff last year, and I think that was a huge launching point, especially for Jack, because you could just how we saw people talk about Jason Robertson last year, and he's a superstar. I think he's a great hockey player, but he took a long time to get going, and really till the back half of the Golden Knights series. That weighs on you game by game when you're expected to be that person that if it's a 2-2 game or you're in a scoring slump, you're supposed to go out there and break that mold, and he wasn't able to get that going. So if you have your top players, you get that belief infused early on, I think you just you play the cards that you're dealt and you rely on the system that's got you there.
Yeah, and you know, to make a quote from a phrase that was very popular in the 90s and it's kind of fallen out of the lexicon, but more money, more problems.
It never will fall out. It's always in style.
Is kind of what I was thinking about when you mentioned, you know, maybe they're not going to click right away. It's like first world problems for the Golden Knights,
truly.
Right?
You know, truly.
I think that may have replaced more money and more problems.
Yeah, I got a mark on my Jordans here on my limited edition, yeah. Right?
That's the voice of Lindsey Brown. I'm Chris Chapman filling in for Ryan Wallace and Darren Millard on the VGK Insider Show. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more right after this on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
We're back to the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show on Fox Sports Las Vegas, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM.
All right, welcome back to T-Mobile Arena, Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Chris Chapman here with Lindsey Brown. We are up in section 104. looking down at an empty rink, nobody on the ice. It's so pretty when you walk into this rink and there's really no one else in here. You kind of get to take it in.
It's like a cathedral.
It really is. I feel like I walked into St. Patrick's in the middle of Times Square. It's a little further up in Manhattan. But anyway, Golden Knights take it on the Chicago Blackhawks. I don't know where I was going with
it's
that
all good.
One. Yeah,
you're doing a lot of radio.
Yeah. Well,
also same.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm coming off the vacay, so at least I'm fresh.
Yeah, well, we are getting ready to head into the most important part of the season. Mm. Next week, Golden Knights, of course, will begin their quest to repeat as Stanley Cup champions. Second season will begin. But, you know, there's this really interesting concept out here. And before I get into playoff scenarios and do we need to make some changes, I want to talk to you about these acquisitions that the Golden Knights have made at the trade deadline, because somehow, some way, Kelly McCrimmon and George McPhee, who won the trade deadline last year, they went out and they got, of course, Jonathan Quick, Teddy Bluger, and Ivan Barbashev at the deadline. Barbashev still with the team, Bluger up in Vancouver, Quick with the New York Rangers, now a member of a team that won the President's Trophy this year. But they somehow managed to outdo themselves this year by going out and bringing in Anthony Mantha, Noah Hanifin, and Tomas Hertl. Where I say they outdid themselves is they've got Hertl and Hanifin locked up. By the way, San Jose retained 17% of Hertl's salary. So,
and they gave the Knights picks too, didn't
yes,
they?
Yes, they got draft picks out of it.
Yeah.
So this was a situation where Kelly McCrimmon realized that the Sharks were a wounded shark and they were like killer whales and came in and took advantage of the wounded shark.
Hit him right in the gills.
Yeah. Watched them sink to the bottom of the ocean
just
for fun.
Yep. Sounds like the orcas.
Yeah, it sounds like something they do.
You're the sharks of the boats.
Yes. But how did the Golden Knights manage to pull this off, first of all? I think we kind of alluded to it a little bit, but that's obviously not what happened. But maybe more importantly, how is it that Hanifin and Hertl have gelled, and Mantha's played well as of late as well, but those two specifically, I'll point out, because they are under contract for the next couple of years. Mantha, UFA at the end of the year, so we're not sure what his status will be for next season. But they go out and they get two guys that they're going to have here until like 2030, basically. Hanifin locked up now for 8 years, the max amount of years you could sign a guy for. You and I talked about it with our friend Eddie about how we thought it was imperative that they re-sign Noah Hanifin. There was maybe some possibility that he was going to go back east, be closer to his family. But the Golden Knights continue to find ways to do this. And before I go into my next point, I want to ask you, though, like, what have you seen from these two guys that make you excited as a hockey fan?
Well, I think last year what was great is that the way they approached the trade deadline, they got value out of it. But this, like, they went big fish shopping. Like, I don't understand the math. I genuinely don't. And I don't understand most math, so I'm not going to even try.
You and me
both. But in terms of what this team really has struggled with at different times during the year, one of them is clean breakouts out of their own zone, which Noah Hanifin does extremely well, not just because he's an incredibly efficient skater, but because of his vision. He hits pockets of open ice and players in stride that usually aren't attempted. Sometimes you would even coach away from those attempts, but because he is that caliber of player, you don't take away the special, right? I'm not going to tell Jack Eichel not to go coast to coast if he sees a lane. Like, you just like, right. go off by all means. And with Hanifin, there's such a simplicity to his game. I think he skates so much like Mark Stone does. Now, the stride, completely different, but there's no wasted movement. A lot of times he'll be standing still, but if you're constantly moving, that means you're also constantly having to make up for any space that you may have given away or taken too big of a loop. Like, you can be an amazing skater in many different ways. He just does it in an incredibly efficient manner and pairs that with his vision, which we also saw on that overtime goal the other day. Like, the extra stick handles drive me nuts because it gives a split second for the goaltenders to get their blade set, which is the biggest step to getting your save as a netminder. But then it allows people to get in the lane, and you don't have to get all the way in the lane. You just need a piece. It goes off a stick. It goes off a knob. It goes off somebody's nose. Like a bunch of different ways you can be disrupted. But when you have those wristers for your sisters, you're not lining up for the big clapper, and you're able to get those pucks low on net quickly, you are going to have a higher chance of achievement and getting those pucks down low. And so with his decision making and his quickness and how he goes about his business, I think translates in multiple zones. Now when we're talking about Hurdle, haven't been able to watch him as much obviously in this lineup, but as I was mentioning in the first segment, he's a big body that will camp out in front and that will take the abuse, that will win most of those battles. He doesn't get pushed over easy. And if you want to, you can take a penalty by all means. Again, sets up the overtime winner the other day, at least the pursuit into that. And that takes a lot off the plate of Mark Stone, Barbashev, who I think is a great presence in front, but I'd much rather have him cycling.
Yeah.
Right? I want him more behind the net and causing that cyclone that he has with Eichel and Marshy. You want Marshy, obviously, more towards those face-off dots to shoot far and away, and then Eichel's kind of the roamer wherever he wants to go. But with Hurdle, especially on the power play, that puts somebody there where it's like, this is what he does, is what he's best at, and it allows other people to go to areas of the ice that they are the best at as well. Like Mark Stone, I want him behind the net. I want him just off to the side because he has great vision himself. He can do that wrap, that quick wrap that he does with his stick that's unbelievably long with the worst knob I've ever seen in my entire life. And it just simplifies a lot of things. And that's, you know, alluding to our conversation earlier of how this team has been able to maintain despite having some of its superstars out. It all feeds into that. And so I think what Kelly McCrimmon and George McPhee went out and did is they not only addressed a long-term need, which is kind of a reset in some areas of those positions, but then also finding those tourniquets for this team as they were preparing for the playoffs and hopefully take themselves into the playoffs that will translate to the style of play that is necessary.
You know, to my next point, this team manages to do it all the time. Like, they've gone out and they have signed the big free agent, and that was Alex Pietrangelo.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, what this team does is
trade.
They have built through the trades,
mm-hmm.
but once they get a guy here, and I should add another free agent, maybe the first big free agent signing is a guy we kind of forget about, but Paul Stastny came over after that first season. And, you know, this was a team that had gone to a Stanley Cup final, and Paul Stastny was a guy who had, you know, played in a lot of places, but he's a good player. And a guy with a great lineage in the NHL. And I think when he signed here, it really gave this team legitimacy.
Mm-hmm.
And then they make the trade with the Montreal Canadiens for Max Pacioretty. First thing they did, Pacioretty re-signed. They signed him to an extension.
How many times have they done that now?
It seems like they do it all the time. I mean, the Fleury thing was an extension.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't need to extend him, but they did. But Pacioretty, trade, mm-hmm. extension. Robin Lehner, trade, extended.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Mark Stone, trade, extension.
Mm-hmm.
Noah Hanifin, trade, extension. Ivan Barbashev, trade, extension. This team, and more specifically the front office, and I think a lot of it has to do now with Mark Stone, because you heard guys say, hey, when I flew into the city, Mark Stone met me at the airport.
Like, picked him up.
Talk about a welcoming committee.
Yep.
The captain comes out and picks you up at the airport. But this organization, it's like an old saying I heard about UCLA when they used to be really good at basketball. We know if we can get a guy on campus, we'll be able to get him to commit.
Mm.
And they would identify players that they want, make them members of the organization via trade, and then they see the city, and they don't want to leave. The organization rolls out the red carpet for them. The city rolls out the red carpet for them. Great fans here in and. I hate when I see the criticism from the gatekeepers, as I like to call them, mostly in places that haven't won in a really long time, jealousy towards the organization and the fans. Like I saw one yesterday. Well, you guys haven't done it the hard way. You haven't drafted and won. And my thought is, well, clearly they have drafted well because teams like Montreal and Chicago and whoever else that they've made trades with, Buffalo, have wanted the players that the Golden Knights were offering. The Sabres wanted Peyton Krebs. The Canadiens wanted Nick Suzuki. The Blues wanted Zach Dean, who's now playing for them, by the way. So, like, there's the team that's drafted well, but this idea that you can't build a team through trades is lunacy because this team has proved that you can do it that way.
Right. Well, I will say this because I think that the Golden Knights have an incredibly unique climate that they've been able to build this through. And to be fair, like, the hockey imagination is very limited. It's most of the time like, why didn't we think of that? I didn't realize we could trade players of this caliber at the trade deadline. Like, they just didn't do it because it's too risky, right? The best thing that, or the easiest thing to do to get a jump start to your team is to fire the coach. You could have won a cup 2 years ago or less than a year and a half, and then you're on the way out. And there's that kind of shock value, but that doesn't really fall back on the GMs as much as making a pick and then messing that up, right?
Yeah.
But in terms of when they came in 2018, you have a clean slate cap-wise, and then the pandemic happens, which puts everybody in a very precarious situation. I'm obviously not talking about the health and everything else, the serious part of the conversation. But in terms of the economics of hockey, all of a sudden, all of the caps got squeezed and business became harder to do. That's why you saw a lot of players this last offseason sign one-year deals, because this next year the escrow thing is going to get done. There's going to be a bump in the salary cap. They knew that there was going to be bigger money a few suns later rather than the one right here. And the Golden Knights weaponized their situation, and then they've had the creativity that's an outlier. When you talk about outliers, it's usually you're willing to take a chance on something that nobody else knows yet, and that's what they've done. And whether or not other teams can construct it the same way, it doesn't really matter, because guess what? They paid how much money to get into this league, right?
Yeah,
hundreds of millions of dollars. Yeah. How much better of a place is the league because the Golden Knights are a thing? Don't tell me the in arena experience hasn't markedly changed over across the league, because what they started doing here, people are like, oh, we could make this like an energy thing. Not everything has to be a cathedral. Like, I'll never forget going home to Minnesota after spending some time here, and the volume difference of the music and just the music selection. And I get it, there's a lot of purists from where I'm from, like, trust me, it's there's a lot of toxicity, a lot of jealousy that you're talking about, but the league is better because the Golden Knights are what they are, and that they've had the success early on. Because what happens if they don't have that lightning in the bottle first season, right?
Yeah.
Maybe not every license plate that you see on the highway here has a Golden Knights helmet on it. Like, how, just think of how different the sports town that is Vegas now. Because I think the way that the Golden Knights were able to prove that we can not only success as a professional sports team in Las Vegas, but it's a hockey team. It's not necessarily an indigenous sport. There's not a lot of snow here. Like, that was provability for the Super Bowl to come here. For, I know the Raiders are already en route, the baseball team, we're going to get an NBA team. The Aces are what they are. A lot to do with the success that has bubbled up together. And when winners win, and there's nothing this town loves more than winners, even though it's not necessarily built on them.
Yeah, it's built on losers, which is kind of funny. But the Golden Knights have proven that they're a winning organization. That's the voice of Lindsey Brown. I am Chris Chapman. We're going to take a break. Get you set for hour number two. Coming up, this is the VGK Insider Show on Fox Sports Las Vegas.